It's a report day for the grain and livestock markets. The World Ag Outlook Board will update not only the current marketing year supply and demand estimates, the new crop balance sheets will be released for the first time. And we'll get the winter wheat crop estimate, the first one of the year, from the National Ag Statistics Service. I'm telling you, it's a big day for grain data.
Live from the spacious comfort of my palatial basement via Farm Journal broadcast, this is AgriTalk. This morning, we weave a conversation with Dr. Gary Adams, President and CEO of the Cotton Council of America. Then we crunch the numbers with Paul Niefer from Clifton Larson Allen. And right after the news, Annalisa Laca from Farm Journal's Milk. And hey, Chip, we should probably get ready for these USDA reports up at 11 Central today.
That's handsome, right.
Newsman Davis Michelson. Now, here's your beloved host, Chip Flory.
All right, Davis, thank you so much. Did the construction crew leave to give you such wide open spaces, or did they move down a level?
Here's the thing. It's actually worse than ever before down here. You know how construction zones can get. But I've decided, hey, look, let's change our perspective on this. You know, my spacious palatial basement. That sounds a whole lot better than I'm sitting down here under the stairs. You know, it's mind over basement, bro. Mind over basement.
Mind over basement. You know, that is the kind of attitude that we need to see just kind of take over America right there.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know,
look at everybody.
Woo. It's kind of like my mom always used to say, you know, there, that's good enough. But
yes.
mom, that's still a 6-inch gash in my leg. Oh, no, here.
You'll
that's
be fine, honey.
That's
You're
fine. You're okay. Oh, man, Davis, we got a lot of ground to cover today.
Yes, sir.
We're going to be talking cotton. And we've mentioned cotton on AgriTalk before, and we've talked about cotton issues and how cotton is such, you know, is a battleground, really, when it comes to trade issues. But I don't recall having Gary on the show for quite some time. We need to get an update on what's going on from the National Cotton Council. I'm going to wait until we talk with Gary to make an announcement of some things that we're adding for the afternoon show. But we're reaching out and going to cover some more cotton going forward. So, and then of course, Paul Niefer. It's always good to get an update on Paul. And even if we just get an update on what Paul is thinking about and what is occupying his time and what he is thinking about writing about, that's worth it. That is worth it.
100%.
Because it gives us a heads up on what might be coming down the line. All right, let's get to the news.
Well, Chip, President Donald Trump has dismissed murmurings of renegotiating the Phase 1 deal with China after a report in the Global Times hinted that China may want to terminate the deal. Speaking to reporters, Trump said, quote, they would like to reopen a trade talk and make it a better deal for them. He says, I'm not interested in that. Let's see if they live up to the deal they signed. Now, Chip, from the Chinese side, Foreign Ministry spokesman Zhao Lihan said the Phase 1 deal is a positive, saying, quote, China and America reaching the Phase 1 trade deal benefits China, benefits the U.S., and the whole world. Chip, so we talked about Phase None Point O.
And then Phase None Point
I don't know what to make of this. Yeah, we're in negative territory now.
You know what? We've got somebody with a much stronger take on it than either you or I could put on it coming up when we have the conversation with Gary. We'll wait for him.
Great. Well, House Democrats are working on their fourth COVID-19 aid package, and some officials expect to vote as early as Friday. But House Majority Leader Steny Hoyer said there would be 72 hours notice relative to when lawmakers would need to be in Washington for that vote. Some moderate Democrats are concerned the more than $2 trillion aid package reaches too far outside COVID-related issues.
Wow.
GOP leaders have not been consulted as the plan takes shape, with Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell insisting more time is needed to assess the success of prior packages, Chip.
I wish I could remember who described it. Now that I think about it, it was House leadership that described the coming package as partisan, just flat out, it's partisan, Yep. And for the ag side of things, it will be more consequential than farm bills. I mean, they're writing farm policy in this package that's coming up.
Right, right. And the GOP is yet to see it. Yeah.
It's going to be crazy.
Chip, in the week following an executive order from the president ordering meat processing facilities to remain open, confirmed cases of COVID-19 surged 40% in counties with major slaughterhouses. The rise in infections compares to the national infection rate, which rose 19% during the same period. Meanwhile, Dr. Anthony Fauci, the nation's top disease expert, is expected to warn the Senate of, quote, needless suffering and death, end quote, if the economy reopens too quickly. Chip, the Federal Reserve Bank of New York's monthly survey of consumer expectations found that respondents' median expectation of losing their job over the next year rose to a series high, while expected earnings, income, and spending growth each reached series lows. And here, this is interesting too. Quickly, Chesapeake Energy warned that it might not be able to stay in business as weak oil and natural gas prices imperil a years-long effort to pay down hefty debt. Chesapeake is now among dozens of U.S. shale firms facing possible bankruptcy as crude oil prices crash. Analytics from Rystad Energy expects some 140 American oil and gas companies to file for bankruptcy protection this year at a U.S. benchmark oil price around $20. Chip.
Wow. Yep. You know, on reopening the economy and yes, businesses, sir, and the risk, the health risk involved with it, it goes right back to a question that we asked in early or mid-March. You know, what's too quickly? How much of a shutdown is too much of a shutdown? Right. These are all unknowns. I mean, but sometimes you've got to decide that your basement is spacious and palatial.
And it is spacious and palatial down here, Chip.
And that it's time to move on. Let's bring in Annalisa Lacka. She's the editor. Thank you, Davis. Editor of of Farm Journal's Milk. How you doing, Annalisa?
I'm doing great. How are you, Chip?
Good. So USDA has started the food purchase program. Is this really going to help firm up milk prices?
Yeah, you know, they ended up purchasing yesterday 300, and they announced at least 300, and let me tell you the right number here, it's $317 million, I think, dollars in food purchases. And new analysis from FC Stone shows that, you know, we can expect that to be about 3.2% of total farm gate milk production. And should they do that again in July and August, which is the expectation, that could be a significant surge in demand. It would be, and that could also help us to recover these milk prices quite a bit more quickly than what we originally anticipated.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, we're all looking for any way that we can possibly support this market after the dive that we've seen in here, right?
Yeah, absolutely. So if we make some, you know, assumptions about products that we think that they'll purchase, FC Stone estimates that they will buy an extra 270 million pounds of cheese, 50 million pounds of butter, 1.4 plus billion pounds of fluid milk. And while those purchases wouldn't completely offset the full decline we had in food service sales for May, FC Stone thinks that, you know, continued improvement and continued food purchases into July and August would get us back to pre-COVID levels even.
Excellent. Annalisa, thank you so much. Appreciate it. We've got to take off. Yep. We've got Gary Adams from the Cotton Council up next.
AgriTalk is brought to you by Clarafly Larvicide, your feed-through fly control solution.
Everyone talks big yields, but Channel Seedsmen deliver advice that yields results. Every season, Channel Seedsmen match elite seed products with unmatched service and support to push the performance of every acre. That's why you can count on Channel for what you need to make the most of your season. You don't have to be a Channel customer to take advantage of this support. Visit channel.com/agritalk to sign up and receive expert advice that yields.
The best talkers in ag, including you. Join the conversation on AgriTalk. Call us at 855-4-TALK-AG.
Yeah, that's 855-482-5524. You can also tweet at us, and when you do, include hashtag AgriTalk in the message. That way I'll be sure to see it. All right. I want to get started. Let's bring him in here. Gary Adams is the president and the CEO of the National Cotton Council. He joins us right now. Gary, it's good to talk with you. Thank you so much for making time for us.
Absolutely. It's a pleasure to be with you this morning.
Good deal. Good deal. Tell us about the National Cotton Council. You're out of Tennessee, right?
That's right. Our main office is in the Memphis, Tennessee area, and then we also have an office in Washington, D.C., and we're a trade association that represents the U.S. cotton industry from cotton producers through the gins, the merchandisers, warehouses, cotton seed segment, all the way up to the textile manufacturer.
Yeah, when I was I've looked at what the National Cotton Council is and what it has done before, but getting ready for the conversation with you, Gary, I went and looked at the site again, and the reminder that it is really all encompassing of the cotton industry it's all over your website, and that does make it a bit unique of the commodity groups.
It really does, I think, from the standpoint of having that whole value chain as a member under one umbrella organization, absolutely.
Yeah, it's really cool. Okay, so, Gary, no secret, no surprise, it's been a tough, 18 months or so for the cotton market. And when we talk about trade with China, we do mention that cotton is impacted. We've talked about that. But I'll admit, we focus on pork. We'll focus on soybeans. But cotton has been a battleground in this trade negotiation with China, hasn't it?
It has. And textile mills in China have been significant customers of U.S. cotton for the past number of years, really over the past decade. And when we saw the tariffs being put in place in starting in the middle part of 2018, then we really did see a significant decline in the sales of both U.S. cotton and U.S. cotton yarn produced by our U.S. textile manufacturers that were shipped to China. We went from, on the U.S. cotton fiber, we would typically have a market share of around 45% of China's total imports of cotton. That went down to somewhere in the range of about 15% and really lost out market share to Brazil and Australia.
Right, right. Davis had an item in the news that Chinese officials may be interested in reworking phase one agreement. What's your thoughts or your take on that, Gary?
Well, and certainly we've seen some responses out of President Trump's administration that did not, did not seem to want to entertain that notion. I think we're obviously watching phase one very closely because the implementation of phase one, I believe, is going to be critical for what the cotton market does between now and the rest of this year. We know with their commitments to purchase on average about $40 billion of agricultural and ag-related products, certainly no China, cotton's in that mix. Frankly, if we go back to somewhat the historical market share that U.S. cotton would have had, we need to see China purchasing somewhere around 4 to 5 million bales each year of U.S. cotton, and we're just not seeing that right now.
Right, exactly. Okay, so cotton, along with many other crops that are exported to China, were compensated, at least in part compensated, through the Market Facilitation Program, or the MFP, to cover some of the costs and the lost marketing opportunities. I'll admit, Gary, I was a little surprised by the report from Kansas State that says that cotton producers were overcompensated by the MFP. What's your take?
Well, our take is that they have not been overcompensated at all. Certainly, it's been very beneficial to producers to receive that assistance. But when we look at, when we look at USDA's methodology, particularly in MFP2 with the county level approach and coming up with a weighted average payment for cotton, across all the cotton acres, we were estimating that was about $99 an acre. When we look at where cotton prices were before the trade war started and where they are today, we estimate the market value of an acre of cotton has fallen by about $197 per acre. So we really think that the MFP assistance provided only about 50% of the decline in what we saw in the market value of an acre of cotton.
Right. And what is K-State's justification for saying that cotton producers were overcompensated on this? I don't get it.
Well, as I was looking at it, and again, looking at their study, which was really comparing the results of the USDA methodology on calculating trade damages with other economic models. So essentially, they were just comparing the output of the USDA models with other models that had attempted to analyze the impacts of the China trade restrictions on cotton, as well as there were other commodities in there, but obviously cotton generated a lot of the headlines. I would say as we went through and looked at some of the studies that they were using as a basis of comparison to the USDA work, those studies were done very early on before we actually had observed the actual trade damage. And even one of the studies acknowledged that their results were still preliminary in nature. So I think it was really just trying to compare the fact that there were differing results from two different models. But I think the truth lies in, one, what's happened to actual market prices since we've seen the tariffs go in place. And the second is what's happened in market share. And we've seen the price decline, and we've seen the U.S. market share decline markedly since where we were prior to the tariffs.
Okay. All right. So let's move away from those tariffs. Shouldn't we be looking at some of the other Asian markets as a source of demand for U.S. cotton? Vietnam comes right to the top of mind on it, doesn't it?
Yes, and we have seen Vietnam be a growing market for U.S. fiber. In fact, right for the last couple of years, they've been ranked as the number one export destination for U.S. cotton.
Okay.
Some other markets that are important are countries such as Bangladesh, Indonesia. In this most recent year, we've seen Pakistan increase their imports of U.S. cotton. So, yeah, there's other markets as well when we look at just the whole Asian realm.
What about Central America? Where do the Central American countries fit in this, Gary?
Well, they are still critically important. And I think, and we don't want to forget that the U.S. textile industry, well, prior to COVID, and it's certainly suffering under the impacts of the COVID pandemic, but U.S. textile industry consumes about 3 million bales of U.S. cotton. They operate a lot of integrated supply chains with Central America. And so we see a lot of the yarn and fabric produced by our U.S. industry going into Central America for further processing. And a lot of that eventually comes back to the U.S. retail market as a finished consumer good. But it's U.S. cotton that's kind of making its way down there for processing and coming back.
Gotcha. Should we be doing more of that? Shouldn't we? Everybody's talking about, after COVID, the catch question, I was going to say catchphrase, but it's more of a catch question, is shouldn't we be relooking at our supply chains out there? Well, shouldn't we? Should we bring some of the textile business back to the U.S.?
Absolutely. And I think this provides a tremendous opportunity. I think one of the things we've seen from supply chains is that with the trade tension, even before COVID, those supply chains were looking to see how they could reestablish themselves and perhaps not be as reliant on China as they had been in the past. But I think now in this current environment, particularly what we've seen with PPE, healthcare-related textiles, things like even right down to cotton swabs that are used in some of the testing, we have seen the U.S. textile industry really step up and redirect some of their production lines to be able to produce more of that. And I think it has shown the U.S. that we need to keep a focus on the importance of U.S. manufacturing, and we don't need to lose that demand base. And so hopefully this is an opportunity to, once Very we get cool. past COVID, to see some of those supply chains relocate here and hopefully see a boost to manufacturing. But I will say right now, though, that the economic challenges we're feeling with the dramatic decline in retail demand is really hitting U.S. textiles, U.S. cotton merchandisers very hard.
Yeah. You know, everybody says they're getting a stimulus check and then you can shop from home and you can do this and you can do that. But for the first time last night, Gary, my wife was having the conversation with me about, you know what, doggone it, I just missed going out and shopping. And she's not spending the time online shopping like she might be if she could go with some friends to a shop and actually look at stuff. I've got 30 seconds for you on this one, Gary. What are the challenges that the cheap crude oil creates?
Well, I think, obviously one of the biggest challenges is that there's a relationship between crude oil prices and polyester prices, which is a strong competitor for cotton. If we look at, again, at world polyester prices, those are trading below 40 cents a pound. So we know that always creates some headwinds for cotton demand. But I think the thing we want to emphasize on cotton is it's a much more environmentally friendly option than you look at oil-based fibers such as polyester. So we hope that gives some momentum for cotton demand going forward.
Gary, this was a lot of fun. We're going to do it again, okay?
All right. Certainly enjoyed it very much. Thank you.
Good deal. That is Gary Adams, President and CEO of the National Cotton Council. You know, our signal gets into cotton country. We're going to start reporting the closes in cotton futures and weekly export sales in the afternoon edition of AgriTalk.
Opinions expressed on AgriTalk do not necessarily reflect the views of Farm Journal Broadcasting, affiliate stations, or sponsors. The truth is hard to come by these days, unless you listen to AgriTalk.
Okay, let's see.
Was that the AgriChicken?
Carry the one, K-40. Okay.
Hold on, America! Davis is 17. Ciphering!
I'm crunching the numbers.
what you got there, buddy?
It comes out to a giant goose egg. That can't be
really.
Right. Yeah, I don't know.
You figuring salary sort of benefits? What are you figuring?
All of it. You know, the overall, the overall projection.
Okay.
Yeah. I wish we.
You're
had
not
some...
happy.
Well, if there was a numbers expert or someone we could talk to, I'd feel a lot more comfortable.
Oh.
If only. I don't know. Can we get somebody like that?
Maybe. Let's see if he's out there or not. Paul Niefer? Are you there, Paul?
I am here.
Oh, good deal.
A good deal. Paul is the Farm CPA on Twitter on agweb.com. He's at Clifton Larson Allen, and he's kind of our go-to guy when it comes to tax issues, business structures, the federal support, how it works, how the payments might come. And I was looking at one of your latest blog posts, and this one is titled, Paul, May 7 is now May 14. Well, May 14 is coming right up. And if I've got this right, basically what they said was, listen, some of you shouldn't have taken the PPP loans, and you should pay it back by May 7th. And if you haven't figured it out by May 7th, we'll give you until May 14 to do it. But they're not giving us the information that we need to determine whether or not we should pay it back or not. Is that right?
You've pretty well recapped it fairly succinctly. Yes. So we still don't have the guidance telling us if you should have to pay it back or not. I think this is my personal opinion, and it is just opinion until we get the guidance. Is I think about anybody in the ag arena that is being affected by a drop in prices, being affected, especially in the livestock sector, you know, with all the issues we have with the packing plants, those are all going to be safe. The ones that maybe, and I'm going to underline the word maybe, have to perhaps pay it back is if they got a lot of cash on hand, they don't need to borrow any money. They're in an ag sector right now. Maybe let's take a look at wheat. You know, wheat really hasn't been harmed too much by the pricing right now. Maybe they should consider paying it back. But again, you know, if you're getting a loan to keep your employees employed, that's what the loan was for. You've met all the requirements. The issue with this is that the Treasury Department just responded to all this flack that the, you know, the Shake Shack and the Ruth Chris and all those. So they're just sort of, you know, covering themselves by issuing this. So I still think if you're a typical small-sized farmer and you got the money, you're probably going to be fine.
You know, I think part of the problem with this whole Paycheck Protection Program, Paul, is that it people have tried to repurpose it. I don't think it was ever – initially, it wasn't designed to keep a business in operating. It was designed to keep – it was designed as a stimulus program to keep income flowing to consumers or the employees of those businesses. They just couldn't figure out a better way to do it. So they used the employer to facilitate
Right. Well, and then the issue too is, so you're giving money to the employer to keep the employees employed, but then the employee was originally laid off and they're over on unemployment and they find out, hey, I'm getting equivalent of $20-$25 an hour being on unemployment. And I don't have to work.
Right.
Now, my employer over here says, hey, I want you to come back to work because I have this loan so I can pay you to work. And that employee says, I don't want to come back because I'm going to take a pay cut. You know, that's so, yeah. You know, Congress, and there were certainly some Republicans saying that issue at the very beginning. They were saying, look, you are incentivizing people not to work. So if that's what you want to do, then you got to realize your PPP program isn't going to work very well. So, yeah.
So no, it's
a mess.
Have you seen any of what is being promoted by Democrat leadership in the House for phase two? Have you?
Well, what I can tell is they want to bail out the states for the states doing stupid things for the last 30 years. That isn't really what, I think the Republicans are going to say, whoa, you know, we're not bailing. I don't want to pick on Illinois, but we know Illinois has got an issue with drastic underfunding of pension plans. And the Democrats are saying, well, maybe we can help out Illinois a little bit. Maybe they can shore up their pension plans. Well, that's the states that have been fiscally prudent, let's say maybe it's Utah, maybe it's Idaho or somebody else. They're saying, well, why are we bailing out Illinois for their past issues? Now, if it's related to the pandemic, that's fine. But that isn't what's going through the House right now, is they want to essentially fund everything that's happened in the past, not what's directly related to the pandemic.
Yeah. Davis, I think you said in the news that this second wave of CARES benefits is another $2 trillion?
More than $2 trillion was the number that I saw. Yes, sir.
Paul, good grief.
Yeah, yeah. Well, on top of already $2 trillion, that's why
I think
president and the Senate's being very smart, saying, whoa, okay, we've already spent $2 trillion. Let's see how it really works. And then based on how it really works, let's step back and say, okay, maybe we should do this, maybe we should do that. Of course, right. And then have you heard the one where they're talking about, and a conservative think tank came out with this, where you would get paid a $5,000 stimulus payment, but in return, you would defer your Social Security for approximately 3 months. What? So you could take $5,000 now, and then instead of collecting Social Security, let's say at age 67, when you're supposed to collect it, you're going to start collecting it at age 67 in 4 months. And that one, actually, that one I'm probably okay with, because really it's not, you're not really giving people money. You're just essentially giving them a loan against their Social Security that might come in, 10, 20, 30 years down the road.
Right. Right. Okay. Couple of other things I want to hear here, and this one goes back to the PPP program. I keep getting questions about what kind of tax liabilities they might have if they accept it and get it and have that loan forgiven. Are there tax liabilities on this?
Well, there's yes and no. The PPP forgiveness, so whatever that amount is currently, well, it is tax-free. So let's say a farmer gets a $100,000 loan, all $100,000 gets forgiven. In that case, he or she is not going to have any taxable income on that forgiven amount. Now, what the IRS came out with about 2 weeks ago, there's a section in the Internal Revenue Code that says that if you have expenses related to tax-free income, which this is tax-free income, then you're not allowed to deduct those expenses. Now, mm-hmm. Congress has specifically told the IRS, told Treasury, hey, that's not our intent. Matter of fact, we discussed this with you beforehand, that this wasn't our intent. So if and when we get CARES number 2 or 3 or 4 or whatever the next number in the CARES Act, likely they're going to fix that. So right now it's tax neutral. So the forgiveness amount is tax free, but then the deductions related to that forgiveness is also non-deductible. So it's sort of a neutral item, but likely we're going to get a double benefit. The amount that they receive is going to be tax-free, and they still get to deduct it, but that's not what the IRS has said. Now we have to wait for Congress to fix it.
Okay, normally there would be tax liabilities, but Congress has already said that this is an exception, right?
Yes, yes.
Yeah, okay.
Correct.
Payroll taxes. This payroll tax holiday.
Yep.
What would it do for the average employee out there? Would it be a stimulus?
Yeah, to me, it's tough to say, because what would happen in their paycheck? So let's say you have an employee that's being paid $1,000 a week, just as an example. It's an extra $60, $62, or maybe $76 that they would get forgiven. Yeah, that helps, but it's not like getting that $1,000 or $1,500 or $2,000 check that stimulates them to go out and spend. When you don't really see it in your paycheck, yeah, it goes up a little bit. Yeah. You don't really notice it. Is that really a stimulus? I'm just not sure.
Yeah. Well, see, from my perspective, it's that kind of an increase in their paycheck that gets spent on things like beef and pork.
Yeah.
And poultry.
Yeah, exactly.
So
it's spent on your items that you need to live on.
Yep. So that's why I keep coming back to this payroll tax holiday is something that maybe we would look at. Gosh, I can't believe it, Paul. We are running short on time. But what's the latest update on CFAP?
Yeah, we're supposed to get guidance on it this week. That's what I've heard. Now we've heard that before, but supposedly, I think, of course, we got the big report coming out today. They probably are waiting for that to be into the market. And then I would guess, I bet you we'll see it either tomorrow or Thursday.
Okay. Well, and just asking this question is evidence of the size of the challenge that farmers are facing right now. But if they double the pay cap, I mean, is that a meaningful difference for many growers?
In the livestock arena, probably not. In the crop arena, yes.
Yeah. Yep.
And again, it depends on the structure. You know, if they've properly structured their entities and so on, that doubling in the pay cap could be a pretty good deal. A lot of our farmers out there, because of estate planning or income tax planning or legal planning, they've really restricted the amount that they can qualify for. So that's something they got to be aware of.
Paul, it's always good to talk with you. If anything comes up that we need to hear, you let me know, okay?
I'm hoping that there will be something that you need to know in the next day or two.
Excellent. That's Paul Niefer, CPA at Clifton Larson Allen, at Farm CPA on Twitter, and a blogger on agweb.com. All right, Davis and I are going to get you ready for the S&D and crop production next.
This season, while work for you may have changed, our season is underway. American agriculture, farms on, for our family and yours.
All right, welcome back to AgriTalk, everybody. I'm your host, Chip Flory. Davis, have you been looking at Twitter at all?
No, actually.
Yeah, it's interesting.
Not in a little while.
At CB Kimbrell, Casey Kimbrell, who's been on the show before.
Yeah.
Made a comment about, so glad to hear the Cotton Council talk about bringing milling back to the USA.
Oh, yeah.
And that's gotten very positive response and support there. But Casey also made this comment, and he is hammer on the head of the nail on this. I mean, mm-hmm. He's exactly right. He said, when China entered the WTO, they were basically given a pass to decimate our milling industry in exchange for a promise of free access to their market in the future. The future is here, and China did not honor their commitment. This goes far beyond Trump's trade war. He is exactly right on that. I remember that so clearly that, and I should have talked with Gary Adams about that. The next time that he is on, we will go back and do a little history lesson on trade relations with mm-hmm. cotton and China to figure out and to provide a little more background, I guess, on how we got to where we're at mm-hmm. with China and cotton trade. So,
yeah,
Casey,
and
good points there.
Yeah, and the other thing is, excuse me, just briefly, yesterday we featured in the news in the morning show how Intel and Samsung and other even computer chip makers are thinking of moving their manufacturing back over to the United States here. This is kind of a trend that's forming here, and
absolutely,
it could be a pretty good thing for us.
I mean, when you start hearing about the surveillance stuff that they are including in hardware, when you, have I ever seen it myself with my own two eyes? Have I seen that little rice-sized chip that is sending information from my laptop back to somewhere in China? No, yeah. I've not. Have I read the reports that it's there? Yes. Do I have some skepticism when I read it? Yes.
Yep.
Do I understand that it's possible? Absolutely.
Sure. Well, so, and, you know, for one thing, first of all, I do keep a little piece of electrical tape over the webcam on my laptops. I don't know if that makes me a nut job or not, but the irony is, if somebody did want to spy on me, they would be sorely disappointed. There's nothing to see here, folks.
Nothing to see here, folks. Except
jokes on them.
Except for my spacious palatial basement.
Yes, yes. Fat man riding a stationary bike.
Yeah, this is what you tuned in for. Right here it
You're
is.
You're welcome. You're welcome, G.
Hey, get a load of this. Never mind. Okay. We've got a report coming up in about 6 minutes from USDA. The World Ag Outlook Board will deliver the supply and demand report. And what makes it special in May is that it is the first official look at the new crop marketing year. So expectations on corn for carryover, and this is according to a survey of trade analysts done by Reuters. So the average trade guess on old crop corn carryover is 2.224 billion bushels. That would be up from 2.092 billion bushels in the April supply and demand report. Just call it up 125 million bushels. Now, the average trade guess on the new crop, the 2020-21 marketing year on corn for the carryover estimate, 3.389. Just call it 3.4 billion bushels. Get this range, dude.
Yeah, yeah.
Get this range, 2.665 billion to 4.295 billion bushels.
That tells the story of expectations right there.
Yeah, 700 million bushels from the middle of the range to the, or from the average trade guess to the top.
Yeah.
That's, it's just mind-boggling. Mind-boggling that it is that wide. Somebody's going to be surprised. That is the bottom line. When you've got a range that wide, if it comes in at average, those that are thinking 2.665 are going to be disappointed. Now, does that mean that they step in and sell? Or you've also got the guys up at 4.295 that are going to say, wow, that's a lot tighter than what I thought it was going to be. Do they step in and buy? That's why what Brian was saying in Markets Now, I think, is absolutely correct. It's going to the reaction to the number is going to be much more important than the number itself.
Okay.
So, yeah, we need to watch this closely. Okay. Yeah. Old crop soybeans carryover expectations, the average trade guess, 488 million bushels. That is up 8 million bushels from April. The trade guess on the new crop for soybean carryover, 430 million bushels. So off almost 60 million bushels from what is expected at the end of the current marketing year. On wheat, the average trade guess is basically unchanged with the April number, where the average trade guess is 969 million bushels. In April, it was 970. The 2020-21 average trade guess on the wheat carryover is 814 million bushels. But, of course, that's going to be driven very much by what we get in the winter wheat crop production report.
Yeah, and that's kind of the distinction between beans and wheat as opposed to corn, which carry is expected to go up. Soybeans and wheat carry expected to go down year on year. So we'll see.
Exactly. Exactly. Real quick on cotton, and this is according to a Bloomberg survey. On new crop only, the carryover is expected to come in at 7.74 4 million bales. That would be up about a million bales from what is from the April old crop from estimate. April. So we're also looking for the higher carryover there. Okay. Like I said, after the conversation with Gary, we're going to go ahead and add some cotton coverage to our daily news coverage. We'll give you the settlements in the afternoon. Thursdays, we'll make sure that you get the export sales report. That was a listener request.
Yes, okay? It was, and we appreciate it.
It was a listener request. Absolutely, we appreciate it. Davis and I are going to have the details of the reports this afternoon. Tomorrow morning, Brian Jennings from ACE and a Farmer Forum.